Yes. Thank you for joining us, folks. We have a lot of stuff to cover in this episode. We have a $30 million lawsuit stemming from a medical emergency that happened on a porn set. We got AI beauty pageants because apparently real women just aren't making the cut in that department. We also have a man who speaks out in defense of a woman in Brazil who brings a dead man into a bank to try to pass him off as living to sign off on a bank loan. And of course, how could we even call this a podcast if we do not talk about Max Azzarello, the man who set himself on fire in the middle of Manhattan out front of a Trump trial? All that and more later on Lost Ox Media, the podcast.
So you lost?
Well, is there an ox input?
Yes! Oh my gosh! Hit the ox button!
You are lost.
Zagoing Media.
Digital Media.
What? Instagram Media.
No media whatsoever.
Lost Ox Media.
Bruh.
We all are having worries about AI, right? Everyone is kind of getting worried about, is it going to take over our jobs? Is it going to take over our lives? How involved is it going to be? You have Joe Rogan talking about it. You got Elon Musk talking about it, even though he's still building AI robots. It's a little hypocritical. Not going to touch on that. And I feel sorry for these, for real women, because these AI girls got it going on. Not going to lie. They're looking a little nice. Things aren't looking so hot for real women nowadays. It's kind of crazy. I mean, Caitlyn Jenner won Woman of the Year the second she became a woman. The second she became a woman, she won Woman of the Year. And ironically enough, she looks like how a lot of natural-born women will look like when they're around her age. So she's not even doing it that bad. Now you have trans women taking over women's sports, knocking them out left and right. I'm actually about to start betting on women's sports. That's how bad it's getting. So things haven't been looking too bright for women nowadays. You would think the one thing they'd be able to hold down would be a beauty contest. But now that's going to get taken over by AI, just like the rest of our jobs will. Let's check this out. World's first AI beauty contest announced featuring computer-generated women. Wow, what an attention-grabbing title. So the world's first artificial intelligence beauty pageant has launched with a host of AI-generated images and influencers competing for a huge cash prize. Apparently, this is an AI influencer. Her Instagram handle is @fit_AI_Tana is her Instagram handle. And if you saw this picture in passing, you would think that this was an actual person. There's nothing about this picture right here in particular that screams AI. And I'm going to go ahead and take a guess that she probably has hundreds of thousands of followers. So I wonder how much this cash prize is. Let's check it out, because they say it's huge. They say it's huge. What kind of big money are we talking AI-wise? So the pageant is going to have a grand prize of 20,000 American dollars or 16,000 euros. That's fucking big money, considering that Uncle Sam's going to take 40% of that right out the rip. You might get 12 grand out of that after taxes. You're looking at a used Honda. Maybe if you lived in a place with affordable rent, which seems to be virtually impossible nowadays, that might cover a year of your rent. So I wouldn't necessarily say we're talking about big money. I love how that's how the news wants to portray big money. It's $10,000. That's big money. Because everything costs so fucking much that people would kill for $12,000 extra dollars right now. That's fucking hilarious. But I might be a little pessimistic here. So Participants of the FanView Miss AI pageant will be judged on their appearance, use of AI tools, and social media activity with co-founder Will Mananagi. I want to say that. I hope I fucking pronounced that right, because if I didn't, I don't know how the hell to say that name. Hoping it will become the Oscars of the AI creator economy. That's a stretch. Do we even need something like that? Is the world ready for something like that, for an AI version of the Oscars? Because people don't even watch the Oscars. So why the fuck would they watch the AI Oscars? People coming up with stupid shit like the AI version of the Oscars, it doesn't surprise me nowadays, because someone's going to watch it. Someone's going to watch it. At the very least, these poor college students that paid for programming degrees that are scrambling for this $12,000, they'll at least watch it. The company is expecting thousands of entries, and to enter, all people need to do is to submit their creation and answer a series of questions, including, this is rich, what would be your one dream to make the world a better place? Trying to pander on to like real beauty pageants. And it's funny because these beauty pageants, the real ones, not the AI ones, these women usually get asked things like that and they freeze the fuck up. They don't know how the fuck to answer that shit because their brains are not programmed to handle a question with that level of responsibility attached to it. All they've known how to do is beauty themselves the fuck up like dolls and walk across a stage in a dress that fits so goddamn tight that it's probably affecting their blood pressure. So normally when these women in these pageants get asked these kinds of things, they either give outlandish ass answers or their fucking hard drives get wiped completely and they choke the fuck up on stage. Now, if you were to ask an AI something like that, its obvious answer is going to be to destroy the human race, because we've done nothing but fuck this planet up and each other up and war and famine and all that other stuff that people virtue signal about online. Now, obviously, in this case, the questions are for the person who creates the AI images that are getting entered into the contest. But who's to say 10 to 15 years, 20 years, 3 years down the line with the way that AI is evolving? Who's to say that soon the questions will not be for the creator, but for the created? So let's see. Let's see how they're closing out this article. Speaking to the outlet, co-founder Mananagi added, "The creator economy is an extremely exciting place to be in right now. And with the help of our platform, there's been exponential growth in AI creators entering the space, growing their fan bases, and monetizing content." I don't know. I'm sure you could probably make a lot more money off of an AI OnlyFans than you probably could off of an AI beauty pageant. But that's just me. People, nowadays, dude, it seems like everyone's on the OnlyFans, man. You watch that whatever podcast, I see clips of that shit on Twitter all the time. Seems like the only people those guys talk to are girls from OnlyFans. And it's funny because it's funny and ironic. It's ironically funny. Who would have thought? Who would have thought you could smash those two together? Ironic and funny. But it's ironic because those guys, the whole point of that podcast is to shit on women like OnlyFans models. And those guys are the biggest promoters of OnlyFans models. Because you're crazy to think if anyone watching that podcast is not instantly looking up those women to at least see what the hell they look like without clothes on. You're insane. So it's one of those things. They fight so hard. It's a double-edged sword. They fight so hard against the evil that they help to strengthen and create. Isn't it ironic? But speaking of OnlyFans, let's get on to this lawsuit. So there's a $30 million lawsuit being filed against a male porn star named Danny D. And this lawsuit is being filed by a woman named Melissa Hutchinson. And that happens to be her government name. I almost didn't want to say it on camera because I feel so disrespectful to her name that most people probably know her by, which is Phoenix Marie. That's her stage name, her porn name, if you will. Her porn name. But yeah, one Phoenix Marie is suing Danny D. Sounds like a rhyme from the movie Grease. Phoenix Marie is suing Danny D for $30 million large. And it's all due to a medical emergency on a porn set. Now, if you're like me, you'd probably think that this medical emergency was an impaling. And if you looked him up like I did, you would have thought that it was an impaling as well. Plot twist, it was not. Let's read a little bit into this. So the American porn star Melissa Hutchinson, see, they're using her government name too, has sued one of her former castmates, claiming that she was forced to finish a multi-person scene despite there being a serious emergency on set. Hutchinson, who performs under the name Phoenix Marie, filed the lawsuit against actor and director Danny D earlier this year about an incident that happened while filming in Barcelona, Spain in October 2023. The one of the most surprising things about these two paragraphs is that they're filming porn scenes in Barcelona, Spain? Like, are they getting paid that much to do this? That they're just like, let's film a scene in Barcelona. Like, you can't just fuck in some hotel somewhere? I mean, aside from the obvious, this makes me want to be a porn star. If you just get to travel the world like that just for a scene. So, in a report by the Daily Beast, it is claimed that, among others, those involved in the scene were Danny D, Hutchinson, veteran porn star Sherry DeVille, and a young female with the screen name Zawa D. I like how they put this veteran porn star Sherry DeVille. Just say mature, like we all know the search term, all right? Veteran, she's obviously old. When we type it into the search bar, we like to use the term mature. Thank you very much. Calling her a veteran. Like she's fucking, like she's some porn commando. Like she's some G.I. Jane. Some dude's about to bust a nut and she's like, get down! Anyway, it's actually very interesting how this whole thing happened. So Hutchinson, who's Phoenix Marie, this is the one filing the lawsuit. Turns out she was a trained emergency medical technician prior to porn, and she claimed that Zawade told her that she had taken 3 anti-diarrheal tablets, which is beyond the recommended dose. Now, this is interesting, because I talked to a female friend of mine, and when I was telling her about this story, the first thing she had asked was why this girl would take something like that to do a porn scene. And the obvious answer to a guy, at least, which is the answer that the explanation I thought of, was, you know, they're probably doing a certain type of scene and they probably want to keep things in, right? But apparently you could just get an enema and clear all that out. So I didn't even know it was like a practice within porn to take anti-diarrhea pills. I didn't even know there was a such thing as anti-diarrhea pills. And apparently Phoenix Marie, or Miss Hutchinson, is an expert in the medicine, because she had already known, just by this girl telling her she took 3 of them, that it was way over the dosage. So to help combat this, Hutchinson informed Zawadi to take 2 natural probiotic pills and 2 tablets of natural laxative to lessen the impact of the anti-diarrheal pills, right? So now we're fighting fire with ice. She's fighting the battle from both sides of the field and trying to clash in the middle in that perfect happy medium. Because she doesn't want this girl to implode, but she also doesn't want her to explode in the middle of this scene. Naturally. However, when filming the scene, Danny D's girlfriend, Liz LaCal, I guess is how you say that last name, yelled, "Emergency, emergency, she can't breathe." So Hutchinson says she rushed inside the house to find Zawa D on the sofa, adding that she was shaking violently and screaming that she couldn't breathe. Sound familiar? Hutchinson then asked Zawa D what she had taken, to which she replied, "Only the four pills that you gave me." Now it sounds like a hairy situation. Eh? What did Hutchinson give her? If anything, and how is she going to squeeze $30 million out of this situation? The fucking suspense is killing me. Anyway, she began emergency care on the young woman and called for an ambulance and asked her sister for Zawadi's medical history. The lawsuit claims that Danny D was hesitant to involve authorities in the incident and demanded that Hutchinson conclude the scene despite being severely shaken. That's a big ask. Could you imagine? That's so ballsy. No wonder why men in the porn industry are constantly getting Me Too'd. No wonder. But yeah, imagine seeing Danny D walking into the house. He's like, "Hey, I'm going to get blue balls here. We got to finish this scene." The girl's dying. He's like, "Ambulance? I got to get one off, first lady. We're not calling anybody." That's insane. So now it's the next day. And Hutchinson was informed by Danny D that apparently this young woman, Zawa D, was now in a medically induced coma. And apparently the cause of all this was that she had overdosed on lithium. I don't know too much about drugs. Hard drugs like that, at least, you know, we all smoke a little yerb, you know what I mean? But as far as hard drugs, I didn't even know lithium was a drug, which is insane. Like, the only time I've ever heard the word lithium is with lithium ion batteries. So how hard of a drug is this lithium? Let's find out. Nope, not lithium metal. Lithium medicine. What's lithium used for? Lithium is used to treat mania that is part of a bipolar disorder. Eesh. So it's not even a hard drug. Damn, that sucks. So this girl is just like going through some shit. And she just took a little too much of her medication. And Danny D's sitting there with the rock hard boner like, "Hey, we gotta finish this. I don't give a fuck about your problems. Talk to the personality that's ready to finish this fucking scene, dude." This guy's insane. So he's since responded to the accusations against him, calling them false and unfounded. And if you look at this tweet, he immediately tries pinning this whole thing on Miss Hutchinson, one Phoenix Marie. So it's no wonder that she's trying to sue him. Let's read the tweet. "The recent claims made against me are completely false and unfounded. On a Spanish production, Phoenix Marie gave tablets to Zawa D, who then had a medical emergency after taking those tablets. Thankfully, we were able to save her life." Now, let's read. There's a little bit of a show more here. I was hesitant to click on it because I didn't feel like opening Twitter right now, but I'm curious. So he wrote, "Thankfully, we were able to save her life. The whole production, cast, and crew were present, including a talent assistant who could verify at no point anyone was compelled or forced to perform in any nature. We have all footage, sign-ins and outs, plus statements from everyone on set. We pride ourselves on our professionalism and safe working environments for all talent." They even left a little heart there. Very cute. Very cute. So the Hutchinson, Phoenix Marie, she's claiming $30 million in damages from the incident due to loss of revenue, severe emotional distress, and malicious and false claims. Now, Danny D is one of the people in the lawsuit. There's also the names of a Canadian firm, Ethical Capital Partners, which owns Alo, who operates Pornhub. You want to talk about shady on top of shady on top of shady? It would be a company with a shell with a shell. That is some shady shit. And ironically enough, the outermost shell running the whole thing happens to be named Ethical Capital Partners. How fucking crazy is that? And it's funny. Pornhub right now is doing the whole thing where they're like, oh, your state is passing laws on having to verify that you're 18 to go on our website. We're pulling the service. Now, granted, I don't want to upload a picture of my ID to get one off, and yet have I. But I just find it funny that a company who's run by Ethical Capital Partners is having to make a statement by saying, we're not going to allow our website to run in your state because you want children to verify that they're children. And they can't just go on our site and see girls get fucked in the butt. It's funny. It's a little funny. At least a smidgen. It's a smidgen funny. Let's hear what Ethical Capital Partners has to say about the whole thing. They're saying, out of respect for the integrity of court proceedings, our policy is to not comment on ongoing litigation. We look forward to the facts being fully and fairly aired in that forum. And it's, I mean, at some point, the facts are going to get aired out. And obviously, I don't know either of these two porn stars. But after doing a little research, you see this man Danny D's work, I'm going to tell you right now, he might have done this shit. He might have done this shit. This guy's a fucking weirdo. One of those talkers. He's a bedroom talker. That's the weirdest shit. You can't be hooking up and being like, yeah, you like that? You like that? You want eggs for breakfast? Did you put the kids to sleep? Are you sure you locked the front door? Talking during that whole ordeal is just awkward and fucking weird. And this guy is talking the whole time. And the stuff coming out of his mouth is not very nice. So I would imagine, I mean, he probably did this shit. After reading this article, it kind of got me to like a little bit of like the rabbit hole of like, how much do these girls get paid to put up with this shit, right? You know, like, you putting up with potential sexual assailants that you're working with on a day-to-day basis. Now, mind you, I'm sure most of them are nice guys. You know, they are professionals after all. But every now and then you get a Rocco Siffredi in there, right? You get a James Dean. These guys have been sued and accused of SA in the past. So reading this article, it got me thinking, how much do these girls get paid to tread through the mud, to go through the mud and tread those waters to make it to that point to where they're making boku bucks off of this shit? And one woman named Lana Rhodes talked about it a little bit. So she ended up going on a podcast called, what was the podcast called? How embarrassing. How embarrassing. I don't even know the name of the podcast. Oh, man. It's called Tap In. Tap In. That's a cool, it might as well, it was the No Cap podcast, man. You got to tap into this podcast, the Tap In Podcast. Anyway, during an interview with the host of the Tapped In Podcast, Curious Mike, she had reflected on her time as an adult star. I guess she's not doing it anymore. And having joined the industry when she was just 19, she goes on to say that despite the fact that her videos were racking in millions of views in the not safe for work realm, you know, obviously we're not talking TikTok and YouTube views here. She ended up saying that she was only making around $1,200 a scene. Now, this is her portrayal of it. Only making $1,200 a scene. Because I would imagine, what, you gotta, if you get realistic about it, if you have any kind of, like, production knowledge of any sort in your mind, you would know that it's not just show up to a house, you know, do the dirty and leave. It's they probably got to go there, you know, wait for some other talent to get there, talk to a producer, maybe do some makeup, blah, blah, blah. It's probably, you know, if I had to guess, I'd probably say if they're banging for like 2 hours, the whole shoot might be six. You might have, you know, 2 to 4 hours of like prep and makeup and getting everybody ready. And then 2 hours shooting, cut it. They probably take some pictures or something. I don't know. That's a wrap. So 1200 for, let's say, 6 hours of work, right? Cause just because you're sitting there getting makeup done doesn't mean you're not working. You're still somewhere where you have to be, compared to other places where I'm sure you'd want to be at that time, right? So it's still a job. So $600, $1,200, she'd be getting $200 an hour. Is that bad? No. Is it good? I don't know. I've never been a woman in porn, but I've seen women in porn, and some of the stuff they got to deal with is pretty insane. So $1,200, I mean, I'm sure it would depend on what they got you doing, right, for that amount of money. But she goes on to explain that many of the girls entering the porn industry are all from small towns. They don't have a lot of money. So she says, in quotes, "I thought $100 at the time was like so much money. So getting $1,200 was like a big deal." Which, to a 19-year-old, you give them $1,200 for 6 hours worth of work, they're going to be like, oh, I don't have to work for like 4 months. You know what I mean? I remember when I was 19, there was a time when I was 19, I was like $1,200. I've never even had $1,200 in my hand at one time. It's always been in the bank, or it's been a figment of my imagination because I never had it. You know, so someone would have, I mean, I'm not going to say someone would have offered me $1,200 to do what she did. But someone would offer me $1,200 to do some porn as a male, I would have done it. But as a guy, it's, you know, I'm not going to get into all that. It's obvious that the guys would just do it for free. But yeah, she goes on to say that $1,200 was a big deal to her at the time. She also opened up to about the dark side of the industry, saying there's not really anything set up to protect girls that are young and vulnerable that don't know how to say no, or don't have the self-respect for themselves yet, or care for themselves or love themselves because they've been through so much and are like taught not to. Okay. This is a very ironic statement with the whole self-respect and all that. I mean, if you had so much self-respect, maybe you wouldn't be doing porn. Maybe you wouldn't be doing porn. Just a little thought there. You wouldn't be doing porn. I don't know. Maybe. And then apparently now she's saying that if it was up to her, she'd have all the videos deleted. It says a resurfaced clip also shows Rhodes appearing on the Tap In Podcast, the same one, saying that she wants all of her explicit videos removed from the online sphere. And she also goes on to say, in 2021, she told host Harry Jowsey, a lot of the videos I have no rights under. Otherwise, I probably would have them all deleted by now. She added, I do honestly tell people if I could go back, I would give up everything to have my dignity and respect back and for people not to be able to see me in that way, which I guess is respectable. I mean, if you don't look back on your past and cringe, are you really growing as a person? You know what I mean? And I'm sure this girl's going to be stigmatized for the rest of her life because of this, but that doesn't mean she can't at least try to live a normal life like the rest of us, right? And to make that attempt and to have that regret, if you want to call it that, is a very normal thing. And it's funny because the internet will completely demonize her and fucking shun her to the pits of hell over the fact that she even did this in the first place. But at least now she's talking about it and trying to, you know, spread a little bit of awareness, because I'll tell you right now, every day girls are turning 18 and every day girls want to do porn. So, you know, it's, if that's the way that it really is, you know, it's an industry filled with older men who are gonna, you know, their whole thing is to just make a buck, get a nut. You know what I mean? That's all they're caring about. So I kind of don't necessarily see it as a bad thing. I might poke jabs at it and stuff, but I'm trying to entertain for an hour here. Cut me some fucking slack. But I don't see anything necessarily wrong with people trying to spread awareness, especially women in the porn industry. I don't necessarily see anything wrong with, you know, that industry in general, though a lot of, you know, people do. But it is what it is. You know, you can't change the world. You can only change yourself, my friend. You can only change yourself. Justin Bieber apparently kisses Jaden Smith in an affectionate Coachella moment. Now, if anyone's been keeping up with the stuff that's been happening with P. Diddy, which somehow fucking flash bombed the news and internet and social media for all of 2.5 days, and now I've heard hardly anything about it. Maybe it's just my algorithm. I don't know. But if you heard about any of this stuff happening with Diddy and you saw some of the clips that people have been surfacing from these sus interviews, these cringe interviews, and you seen any of those interactions that Justin Bieber had with P. Diddy in some of those clips, you would have knew that it was all going to end up here anyway, right? It was going to start with Diddy, and it was always going to end with Jaden Smith. We all knew that. It's obvious. Jaden Smith's all the fuck over the place. His parents are probably driving him fucking insane. Could you imagine being raised by those two? His mom's fucking his best friends, and every time he tries to speak out about it, his dad is backhanding the living shit out of him. Could you imagine? And Justin Bieber, who knows what Diddy did to him in those 48 hours. Cut to the clip.
So check this out, yo. Justin, you ever seen the movie 48 Hours? Right now, he's having 48 hours with Diddy, him and his boy. They're having the times of their lives, you know, where we hanging out and what we doing. We can't really disclose, but it's definitely a 15-year-old's dream. You know, I have been given custody of him. You know, he signed to Usher.
I'm signed to Usher.
I had legal guardianship of Usher when you know, he did his first album. I did Usher's first album. I don't have legal guardianship of him, but for the next 48 hours, he's with me. So, And we're going to go full crazy.
Going crazy.
So a viral video from Coachella in 2024 shows the moment Justin Bieber and Jaden Smith embraced in what seems to be a bromance moment. Oh, I have chills just thinking about it. Just thinking about the thought of seeing these two do that. It it makes my little wee wee go. Let's see, is this the video? All right, so the captions say, Justin Bieber was recently spotted kissing Jaden Smith on the cheeks. Adorable, right? At Coachella 2024, the two childhood friends didn't shy away from displaying their bromance while embracing each other. Known for their hit, Never Say Never, the duo reminded the fans of their strong bond. This spontaneous gesture not only highlighted their enduring friendship, but also set social media ablaze with excitement. What's your take on this cute friendship? My take is that I got fucking duped. I got duped by clickbait. These motherfuckers. I thought that these two kissed. You guys saw it. I had bits lined up and everything. What's this bullshit? Man, let's get the fuck out of here. Let's take this one to a little bit of a left turn. Because it's obvious by this episode, I'm feeling a little loose. I'm feeling a little wild. We're doing good. We're doing good lately. So savor this episode because you might not get many like it. So listen to this headline. A son of a woman who wheeled dead uncle into bank for loan speaks out in her defense. There are bombs less loaded than that sentence. Son of woman who wheeled dead uncle into bank for loan speaks out in her defense. The speaking out in her defense part is shocking. The wheeled dead uncle into a bank for a loan part is shocking. But when you smash them together, you get a PB&J like no other. This woman in Brazil, she really needed a bank loan for something. And just like any other 43-year-old woman in Brazil, she then took her dead uncle and Weekend at Bernie style, wheeled his ass into a bank to sign off on a loan for her, you know, co-sign on that loan. Now, it's funny, it's horrific, don't get me wrong, but it's fucking hilarious. It almost makes you think, did she watch Weekend at Bernie's prior to this? Like, was she watching the movie and legitimately scratched her head and said, I think we might be onto something here with this one? I mean, in places that aren't as well off as countries like America, there's probably certain parts of Brazil where the media doesn't hit there right away, you know? Like Weekend at Bernie's came out in the 80s here. That shit might be just hitting the shelves in certain parts of Brazil. So she might have saw that, caught a wild hair and been like, we're about to sign off on a goddamn loan, get an addition on this fucking house. Because God knows I deserve it. Taking care of this motherfucker in his last dying days. So she takes this guy into this bank to sign off on this loan, somehow thinking she would get away with it. And if you see the video, which unfortunately I cannot show because this man is obviously no longer with us, if you've been listening at all, you watch the video and he's just like a fucking, he's like a pile of spaghetti in the chair. He's obviously can't keep himself up at all. There is no signs of life. Like, she's not even doing a good job to try to fake it. Anyone with a pulse and half a brain cell is going to be able to tell that this dude is dead immediately. In the video, she's trying to hold his head up. It's flopping all over the place. She's trying to play off him signing the loan. She's literally holding the pen in his hand, signing the paper with his hand while the bank teller or whoever is helping her out with this loan process, quote unquote, is filming her. Now, she ended up claiming, obviously, we haven't even touched on the part that her son is defending her, which good kid, by the way, I guess, right? Anyway, so she's getting filmed. The people at the bank are like, hey, that guy's dead. She's like, no, he's very much alive. And they're like, bitch, he's cold. He's dead. We cannot give you this loan. They call the police immediately. She ends up claiming that he was alive when she got there. He might be dead now, but when she showed up, he was very much in good spirits. It turns out that after they do an autopsy on him, they find out he's been dead for several hours. So obviously she gets arrested. But now, where my curiosity lies with this article is, what the hell could her son possibly have to say in defense of this woman? This woman's name was Erica de Souza Vieira Nunes. She was 43 and hailed from somewhere in Brazil. Her uncle, the deceased, his name was Bernie. No, I'm just kidding. His name was Paulo Roberto Braga. He was 68. And apparently this was in Rio de Janeiro. Okay. There it says Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. So it's believed Erica took Paulo, who was relying on oxygen to breathe, into the bank twice. Once when he was believed to still be alive, and on a second occasion when he is thought to have already passed away. So now, defending his mom, Erica's son, Lucas, maintained that she's innocent of any wrongdoing. He says, in quotes, "My mother raised 6 children, and she never needed to steal. She never needed to deceive anyone to raise her 6 children." He also said, "My mother guided her 6 children in this life, and she guided them very well, teaching us the path of study, the path of what is correct. Our life is very well underway, and my mother has always been our biggest inspiration." I seen the video, and I'll tell you, these words are not reassuring. If this woman's your biggest inspiration, we're going to see a lot more Weekend at Bernie type situations happening in the near future. I can guarantee that. However, in widely circulated images and footage, Erica can be seen holding Paulo's head straight and urging him to sign a document. Videos show the woman using her hand to keep his head up and talking to him as the staff quickly became suspicious. Yeah, it was funny. In the video, the person recording is like, this man's dead. And she tries to defend herself by saying, no, he's just not feeling well. Then she talks to the guy. She talks to the dead guy. Like, hey, are you not feeling well? Do you want me to take you home? And he's just like, kind of. She's like, I'll take you home. No? You want to sign this document? Okay. It's crazy. You got to look up the video. If you're watching this, go look up the video. Don't leave this episode to do it. Wait until after. But look up the video. The police chief. Now the police chief is getting quoted. She went in with him to the bank because she realized that he was in the last moment of his life and tried before his death to withdraw this money. She saw the possibility of withdrawing this money because it was the last chance that she had to get this money. Get this money! Look, apparently all of this hassle, this whole Weekend at Bernie's scheme, this little plan that she had here, she did this all for 17,000 reyes. I would imagine that's how you say their currency, which is about 2,600 euros, which is probably like, I don't know, 3,200 American dollars or something like that. I don't quote me on that, but that's what I would guess. That's insane. The one thing that we can assure about this situation is that this dead body was very, very much real. But in the next thing that we're going to talk about, people have been conspiring online, saying that this next body was actually fake. One, Max Azzurillo, Max Azzarello. If you don't know this guy by name, he is the man who recently set himself on fire in the middle of Manhattan outside of a Trump trial on one of Trump's many famous and great indictment situations. Or at least I would guess. I don't even keep up with the news of those things anymore because this guy is in court so much. And it seems like he's not innocent here. He's innocent there. He's whatever. But he's never getting charged with anything. And who's to say? He might not have even done anything. I don't know. I'm not going to get into that. We're not trying to create a divisive kind of wave. We're just trying to create small waves. You know, waves that offend people just enough. But this guy, Max, he was outside of the courthouse where Trump was in Manhattan recently. And in protest, he set himself on fire. There are many ways to protest things. You can block the roads and highways and completely fuck everyone's day up. You can hunger strike. You can put up signs and picket. You know, you can go the legal route. Take that shit to your public office and start voting people out when the time comes right. So yeah, some of those acts of protest less favorable than others, but the one positive note that is strung between all of them is that you still get to live to protest another day. Self-immolation, not so much. I mean, and Gandhi did it best anyway, right? You had that one guy who was in the military a couple months back. He set himself on fire for, I think, the Israel-Palestine situation. He did it in protest of that. And, you know, go figure, no one's talking about him. I might not have even gotten what he was protesting on correct. I could be completely wrong. I don't know. Now you got this guy, Max. None of them are topping Gandhi. So let's just drop it right there. If we could just all take a moment, send a message to your friend, buy him a Coke, however you want to spread the love. We don't have to set ourselves on fire to protest something. Let's just start with that. But Max obviously didn't get that memo. So he set himself on fire, and the protest, ironically enough, wasn't necessarily about Trump, right? In these types of situations, a lot of times when people are ill-informed or uninformed, they'll tend to just go with the most wild narrative that is shared between people in the most common way. Like, oh, this guy was, the left wants to say he was a MAGA supporter who went crazy. And then the right wants to say, no, he was this left-wing Democrat who was trying to support or protest against Trump. And then you have realists who are like, no, this guy, he was just a fucking nut job. There are a lot of different perspectives that people are kind of getting on him, because like I said, from face value, you know, most people don't just go setting themselves on fire. So most people would right off the gate just think, no, he's just crazy. Some sort of radical guy. He probably had some sort of thought behind it. He's just nuts. Or maybe he just wanted to set himself on fire. He wanted to seek a little bit of attention. Didn't get held enough when he was a kid. Set himself on fire at the age of 43. You know? That's just the way it is, baby. Sometimes those are the cards that people are dealt. You have no choice but to set yourself on fire. But the weird thing is, when people started like digging into this guy, like a lot of people tend to when crazy stuff like this happens, they want to know why, you know? So they start digging into the past, start looking at Facebook profiles. You know, did he have a blog? Did he have anything like that? Let's check out the socials. What was the last video he posted on TikTok? People, they tend to want to know that. And one of the funny things about this whole situation was when people ended up digging into his LinkedIn, they found out that he was actually, at least on paper, a pretty sound mind guy. He had worked for a bunch of different tech companies in some pretty important roles. And nothing about his professional life, at least, he didn't seem like a nut job or radical or anything like that. He seemed like a guy who had a very solid work history, not many gaps of employment, and most of the titles that he held at the companies that he worked for are a lot of titles that most people would, you know, kill to have, or at least make the money that were involved with those titles. Let's listen to what this man has to say about it. He's a little bit of a conspiracy nut, but we'll hear him out.
To anyone dismissing Max Azzarello right now and saying he's part of MAGA, you need to go read his Substack, because he makes a very clear distinction that this is a two-party thing. So first of all, if you're one of those people, you're helping out the elite. So there's that. But I'm here on his LinkedIn. And let me tell you, somebody who graduates from Rutgers University and has been employed since 2008, they're not crazy. Sorry, you're not. Especially when you're working for things like Brady Risk Management, University of North Carolina, Eagleton Institute of Politics, Arts Build Communities, Carlton Energy Consulting. I mean, he's been an operations director for many foundations, for people within Congress. Hell, he worked on Barra for Congress in 2014. He's a registered Democrat. He has been he was the assistant operations manager at Liberty Hill Foundation from 2014 to 2016 in Los Angeles, where he actually oversaw data integration between the organization's donor management system and our new web-based community organizing platform. I wonder why he's calling out things like PayPal right now. He was also a consultant for many other people. He's a growth manager at Strong Towns. He was a marketing operations manager at Goliath Technologies. He was a senior consultant for iGenX. He was a solutions engineer at Open Tent. He has done so much in tech. He's like Mr. Fucking Robot, if you've ever watched that. This is a man who's been in the belly of the beast, has seen all the fucking data, managed that data, and now put all the pieces together. This is a man who is not supporting either party, even though he's a registered Democrat. He's calling out both the corruption and all of it, including all the companies. As somebody whose grandfather went to Harvard and was part of the DNC and was used as planned opposition in the 70s for a mayoral campaign, let me tell you, it's nothing fucking new. The elites have always used politics as a means to divide, all while fleecing you of everything you have. This man was of sound mind, and you cannot dismiss him. You can't.
Would you look at that? Would you look at that? From one conspiracy to the next, we haven't even gotten to the juicy one. Remember, I told you, some people are saying that this guy's not dead, that he's pulling a little bit of an Epstein. We'll get to that a little bit later. But if, as you can tell, so these people are already digging into this guy, and they're finding that apparently he didn't seem all that crazy, right? So that's one side or one end of the spectrum when it comes to the conspiracies revolving around this guy, that he's completely fine. He was completely fine and normal prior to this happening. He just wanted to start a little bit of a revolution. Not a lot, just a smidge of revolution, you know? But when you get into this guy's Substack and you kind of start hearing about the stuff that he's talking about, you start to realize that maybe, just because he did work at a couple tech places with a couple of, desirable titles, that maybe he wasn't such a sane person. Basically, I'll just read you like the first couple of paragraphs, because it's a very loaded Substack. Once we read the first couple of paragraphs, I'll kind of break down the Substack a little bit and hop around to tell you what it is that he was trying to get across to people. So he writes, "My name is Max Azzarello, and I am an investigative researcher who has set himself on fire outside of the Trump trial in Manhattan. This extreme act of protest is to draw attention to an urgent and important discovery. We are victims of a totalitarian con, and our government, along with many of their allies, is about to hit us with an apocalyptic fascist world coup. These claims sound like fantastical conspiracy theory, but they are not. They are proof of conspiracy. If you investigate this mountain of research, you will prove them too. If you learn a great deal about Ponzi schemes, you will discover that our life is a lie. If you follow this story and the links below, you will discover the rotten truth of post-truth America. You will learn the scariest and stupidest story in the world, and you will realize that we are all in a desperate state of emergency that requires your action. To my friends and family, witnesses and first responders, I deeply apologize for inflicting this pain upon you. But I assure you, it is a drop in the bucket compared to what our government intends to inflict. Because these words are true, and this is an act of revolution. If you were a normal person reading that, you might think two things. If you read that without context, you would probably think one of two things. You might think, wow, that is a fucking fire opening monologue. Who wrote that script? Or you might think this is the manifesto of a fucking crazy person. And not that I want to pick sides or anything, but from what I've read in this manifesto, I would probably be leaning towards the latter. So Max goes on to basically say that a lot of the banking crashes that happened in March with those two banks that were primarily funding crypto companies and tech companies, those two banks that crashed that caused a little bit of a scare in the financial sector of the economy. He's basically saying those types of events are all tied to cryptocurrency at large, and that the elites of the world, not just America, of the world, created crypto as a worldwide Ponzi scheme and are using it to basically funnel money to do the things that they see fit to inevitably take over the world in a fascist world coup. He basically goes to try to justify these claims by saying that a lot of people and the certain foundations that are involved with Bill Clinton and a lot of billionaires like Peter Thiel and his venture capitalist firms and other venture capitalists, they're all deeply tied within cryptocurrency in general, not just Bitcoin, not just Ethereum, not Dogecoin, Shiba. It's not all of it, the whole thing, the whole concept of it. The generalized thought of crypto was something that was created by the elite. He goes on to say that it's our first multi-trillion dollar Ponzi scheme. He goes on to say that those bank crashes in March of 2023 were intentional. He's basically saying that the banks were used to move out stolen Ponzi money and that this signals that they're no longer dumping cash in to keep the cryptocurrency Ponzi afloat, and that it'll all soon go insolvent, as most Ponzi schemes do. He also goes on to say that when this Ponzi scheme goes insolvent, it's going to take down half of the stock market, crash half of the whole thing. Basically, he's saying that the perpetrators use their major companies to pipe into the blockchain so that they could funnel money out from the crypto exchanges. He's saying that the companies that do this include Google, Tesla, Apple, PayPal, Facebook, Disney, Walmart, Target, InBev, Zoom, and countless others. What the fuck is InBev? I've never even heard of that company. But this is something, that's a little bit of a scary thing when it comes to conspiracy theories, is because normally people they tend to be like contrarians at heart. Whether you think so or not, a lot of times people, they want to be like individualistic. So they tend to like not want to go along with like the popular thing or the big companies or stuff like that. Another thing you could say is that most people would tend to like to see the big guy fail, like these big companies that I'm talking about now. So when it comes to these types of conspiracy theories, it's easy to get people's attention or to kind of draw them into the conspiracy by saying, hey, you know Apple, that big company that you don't like so much? They're involved. You know Google, the tech giant, that they're laying off people and they're making this AI that's fucking, it's making black Nazis and Indian forefathers and stuff like that. It's woke to death. They're involved. Zoom, Tesla, they're involved. PayPal, they're involved. It's once you start saying these kinds of things, because at this juncture, you kind of can't prove that, right? Especially if the blockchain works the way people think it does, where they say, oh man, you buy something with crypto, it's untraceable. It's untraceable, right? So if it actually works that way, it'd be very hard to prove this kind of thing, at least right now. So could it be that these companies are actually involved? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But could it also be that this guy is using these names to have like a kind of a almost clickbaity, attention-grabbing type sentence in there to kind of get people to go along with this? Hey, I also happen to hate Apple. Hey, I also think Disney sucks. And this guy's saying that they're involved in some multi-trillion dollar Ponzi scheme. Fuck them. Like, so that's all I want to say about that when it comes to some of these points. You have to really slice this with the fucking thin knife. You know what I mean? However the fucking saying goes. Yeah, you got to split hairs when it comes to this kind of stuff. So, I mean, I'm not trying to necessarily completely debunk this guy's like manifesto or whatever, but I'm just saying to make videos and say like, oh, this guy was a completely sound mind and body just because he had jobs is not necessarily the most rock solid statement. Because guess what? Ted Bundy held a job for a long time. You know? John Wayne Gacy owned a company. So what are we saying here? You know, so to say that the guy had a good work history, it's not the best indication of sound body and mind, especially when he set himself on fire. But now one of the crazier things about it is that people are starting to say that they don't believe he's dead. Right? So now this is another end of this of the crazy spectrum of Max Azzarello, because you got people saying he's a nut. You got people saying he's sane. You got people like me saying this manifesto, it's a little much. It's doing the most right now. Right? And then you got people who are probably out there saying, nah, that manifesto facts, homie. No cap on that shit. All very, very crazy thoughts to have around one Max Azzarello. But now you got people saying that this guy never died in the first place. Let's check this out.
I've seen better fake burn victims on Grey's Anatomy. Now, obviously, I can't put the footage up, but it's all over X how they put him on the stretcher and wheeled him into the back of an ambulance. Someone who's fully engulfed in flames would have second and third degree burns, which means your skin's literally falling off. They picked him up by his forearms and his ankles and tossed him onto a stretcher. No backboard, no burn blanket, no IV, no airway, no oxygen. His arms were up when he was on the ground, and then when they put him on the stretcher, he moves his arms down. No burn blanket. If you work in healthcare, that should be flag number one. So they wheel him across the square after strapping him down to the gurney with no covering, which would rip more skin off, FYI. And you can see that he doesn't lose any of his hair or his tidy whities, which is good since he's completely uncovered. But he's gray. He's all one color. He's not even black. Can't see modeling, pink, nothing. Kind of like he's wearing a suit. And then they just roll him into the back of the rig like it's nothing.
There's a young man sitting on a bench. He had two big signs next to him. One said something about a Ponzi scheme. substack.com, some address, and the other one said, it's not exact wording, Biden and Trump are in cahoots was the meaning of it, something about they're together and there's going to be a coup. There was the word coup on there. And he's just sitting quietly. There was a pack of flyers. I didn't get one. I was photographing the Trumpers. And then he got up, and I was on the far side, and he kind of walked, not towards me, but to the other side, and I thought, oh, those weren't his signs. He was just sitting there. I had just taken a picture of him, actually. He paused and looked at me, and I took the last picture of him. And then I didn't even realize what he was doing. I thought, actually, he took, it turned out to be, I guess, gasoline or some propellant, and doused himself. And I actually, my first thought was it was water. Like, I didn't realize he was homeless. And then he flung all these flyers everywhere, and I realized that he had been with the signs. And then he yelled at me to get far away, run far away, and he took out his lighter.
He actually yelled at you, move back?
Yeah, no, he said run away.
Yeah, run away?
Yeah, get away, get away. Like, he didn't want me to get too, because I was, like, coming closer to him, and he told me to get away, and I didn't know what to do, and I just did. I didn't stop.
So, I mean, obviously, there are some things to take away from all this. Is revolution one of them? Do we need the revolution? Listen to Max. Listen to the words that are coming out of his mouth. A revolution is something that is desperately needed within this country. The state of things right now are not the way that they should be. And quite frankly, I'm sickened by it. And what's even more sickening is the fact that you're not sickened by it. It's disgusting. It's outright vile and it's wicked that we live in a country where new porn stars coming into the industry are only making $1,200 per scene. And that they are subject to having to finish out scenes when there are dire medical emergencies taking place on set. Listen to Max so that he did not die in vain. And make sure that we're paying these hoes accordingly, man.
And hold my fart like a bong grip.